Today we're starting here on the bottom of Kufkaf Aleph Amud Bet by the two dots. Gemara is quoting Rabbi Yehuda's Shita from the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ha'alal. And Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says that, unlike the Tana Kama, who says that the Alal can only be mitzdareif to other Ochlim to make up the Kabetz of Ochlim, but does not have Tumat Neveila. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes that you can have Tumat Neveila with regards to the Alal, and that is Hamikunas. If it's gathered together, if it is in a single location, if you have a kezayit in one place, then you can be chayav, and we noted yesterday that really means tamei, but it really means that there is tumat nevela associated with it. Amrav Huna, v'hu shikunaso. Again, we saw this yesterday, the Rav Huna qualifies that and says, that is if he actively brings it together. Not just the mere fact that there is a kezayit there that makes it into something that is tumat neveila. He has to actively undo what would have been the bitul associated with flaying the animal. The alal, remember, are the pieces of meat that are left on the hide after the flaying. Even Rabbi Yochanan agreed that with regard to Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, that was the explanation. And now, the way that you undo the bitul, that is the natural state or the default status of flaying the animal, having those little pieces of meat on it, is vikanaso. If you actually actively bring it together, consolidate it into a kezayit. As Rashi notes, not if some child goes ahead and brings them together, or by chance it happens to be that they are together, but rather it has to be that you have active dat in order to do this. Rashi notes over here what we again noted before, which is that if you believe that the item is batel, and then you want to reactivate it and make it into ochel, then yes, you can have tumat ochlim, but it'll never have tumat neveila. Because tumat neveila has to be something that was basar from the outset and never left the realm of basar. So if you can actively engage the item and say that it is basar, and that means retroactively from the time that it was taken off till the time now it was basar, then you can have tumat neveila. If it just happens to be that now you want something that before was not classified as basar, you can transform that item into something that's ochel, but you can't retroactively instate it as nevela because it left the world of basar in between. So if it was batel to the or, and it wasn't basar at any point in time, then at this point to activate it, all you're doing is making it into ochel, you're not making it nevela. On the other hand, if you actively gather it and undo the bitul that would have been the natural state over here, then you're showing retroactively that was your intent and that you never wanted it to be batel to the or. It means it was a basar all along, and that's why it has tumat nevela. V'amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna also makes a second note, which is shnei chatzei zeitim sheishnan al gabei haor haor mevatlan. If you have a chatzei kezayit here and a chatzei kezayit there, the hide is mevatel it, or in essence, they are batel to the or. It's as if they don't exist. And the Gemara says aliba daman. According to whom does Rav Huna make this statement? There's a machloket upcoming on Kufchav Dalet between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yishmael. Over there they argue about a hide that has exactly our scenario over here. It has two chatzei zeitim on it. And if you touch it, then you're definitely not tamei tumat nevela. Everybody agrees, because you can't touch one half. And then another half zeitim become tamei tumat nevela. You'd have to touch them simultaneously or have a kol kezayit in order to be tamei tumat neveila. On the other hand, if you're masa, what happens if you carry the hide? Now, carrying also makes you tamei tumat neveila. Over here, does your carrying consolidate those two chatzik zeitim and make it that you're carrying kezayit? Because yes, you can't touch two chatzik zeitim simultaneously that are far apart. You have to touch one and the other. That's why you're not tamei. But over here, you are carrying both chatzik zeitim in that single act. Does that make you tamei? That's a machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Shmuel says you're chayav or you're tamei tumat neveila if you carry it b'masa. And Rabbi Kiva says even b'masa you are tahor. So Gemara wants to clarify Rav Huna's statement here that there are two chatzei zeitim on it. They don't count or they're batel to the or. According to whom does he say this? Rabbi Shmuel seemingly believes that the basar is not batel to the or because when you carry it, you can consolidate them and make them into a kezayit. Rabbi Kiva seems to believe that if it is on the or, it is batel to the or, and there is no basar nevela even if you carry it because it's batel. It doesn't exist anymore. There's no basar there, there's just or. So now, Ialiba de Rabbi Yishmael, if it's according to Rabbi Yishmael, Amar, lo mevatel or. It's clear from Rabbi Yishmael that the or is not to vatel it, because if it was mevatel it, you wouldn't have tumat nevela. Again, if you can't reactivate something, if it remains basar all the way along, then it can have tumat nevela. If it's ois basar, and then you reactivate it, that makes it into ochel, it will not make it into a nevela. So it's clear that Rabbi Yishmael believes that it was never batel, and Rabbuna is making a statement that it is batel. Ialiba de Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, pshita, hamar, mevatel or. It's pretty clear, according to Rabbi Akiva, that the or is mevatel de basar. That's why when you carry it, it makes no difference that you're carrying a whole kzayit, two half kzaitim, because it's batel. And then what's Ravuna telling us? Rabbi Akiva already told us that it's batel, so what do I need Ravuna for? Gemara says, lolam aliba de Rabbi Yishmael. It is according to Rabbi Yishmael. B'chi amar Rabbi Yishmael lo mevatel or. Where does Rabbi Yishmael say that the basar is not batel to the or? Hani mileish shepalatato chaya. That's only when the basar was severed from the main flesh and left on the hide because of an attack by another animal or a bite from another animal. Aval palatato sakin batil. But he agrees that if it was flayed, the animal, and that's what caused the basar to go off, that is batel. That's the chiddush of Rav Huna, telling us that Rabbi Shmuel's din is limited. When he says that the basar remains independent of the or, that's in that unique case where the basar was severed from the main flesh and that was on the or because of an animal's bite. But if it was done because of this flaying of the animal, where in general people mevatel it, over there it would be batel to the or, and that's what Rav Huna is telling us. Even according to Rabbi Shmuel, two chatzei zeitim an or, when it was flayed, will be batel. Tashma, is that really work over here? Because you have the other statement of Rav Huna. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, halala mikunas, im yesh kezayit b'makom echad, chayavin alav. Ve'amar Rav Huna. And Rav Huna qualified that, v'hu shekanaso. It was when he gathered it together, when he actively brought it together. So now, iamart bishlama, batuto sakin the Rabbi Shmuel, nami lo batil. If you say according to Rabbi Shmuel, even when you flay the animal, then the basar is not considered to be batel, then Rav Huna damar ke Rabbi Yishmael. Then Rav Huna in that statement is saying Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yishmael. And therefore, since it's not batel to the basar, when you aggregate it, you get your kezayit and it is a nevela. But ela iamart patuto sakin Rabbi Yishmael batil. If you believe, even according to Rabbi Yishmael, when you flay it, whatever is left there is already batel, Rav Huna damar keman. Then who's Rav Huna holding like? Rav Huna, again, cannot activate something that's already batel. So if Rav Yehuda is saying this in the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, then it's clearly not going to work, because Rabbi Akiva says the basar is batel to the or. There's no way to ever make that into nevela. It was batel. Even if you reactivate it, it's ochel. It will never be nevela. According to Rabbi Yishmael, if you say that he believes that when you flay the animal, the flesh that's left behind is still considered basar, then it should be meaningful when you gather it together that you are saying, I don't want it to be batel. I want it to be gathered together and have a din of nevela, or din of basar, which will make it have a din of nevela. But if you don't do that, it will be batel. On the other hand, if you say Rabbi Shmuel also believes that when you flay the animal, the flesh that's on the animal is batel, then Mahusha Kanaso is not going to do anything. It was already batel. You can't reactivate it into basar to make it that it'll have a din of nevela. So then, who is Rav Huna holding like? Now, there are a number of assumptions over here which Rashi and Tosafot point out, which is, first of all, that Rav Huna is the problem, which means that the Gemara doesn't have an issue with Rabbi Yehuda's statement. The Gemara doesn't ask, Rabbi Yehuda, come on. Who does Rabbi Yehuda hold like, Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva? They only say within the context of Rav Huna's qualification, then, oh, who is Rav Huna holding like? Oh, Rav Huna must need Rabbi Shmuel to say the following in order for it to work. How would you have explained Rabbi Yehuda absent Rav Huna? And that's what Rashi says, Damar Kaman. Rashi says over here, Bishlama idla Rav Huna, without Rav Huna, Damar Bhusha Kanso, Abu Mukmina Rabbi Yehuda, Bishop Pilatoto, Tchila, that it was a case where it was taken off in the beginning, Biyachat, in one shot. But Rav Huna seems to indicate over here is that Rabbi Yehuda's statement was, Behusha Kanaso, implying that it was separate beforehand. That's not clear from Yehuda's statement in the Mishnah at all. Yehuda in this Mishnah says, halala mikunas, when halal is all together, im yesh bo kezayit b'makom echad, you have kezayit in one place, chayavin alav. All he said was, if you left in one location a kezayit worth of basar, that has significance. He doesn't say about taking disparate pieces and bringing them together and making them into a kezayit. He just says, if you had a kezayit on the or, it's not patel. So Rabbi Yehuda's position could easily be explained, v'vishum hachi lo batel. The reason it's not patel over here is because you have a kezayit in a single location. Ein hachanami, in general, Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's batel. It just happens to be where it's aggregated in a single location that there is a kezayit, that's where it's not batel. The chi plegi Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shmuel's machloket has nothing to do with this. They're speaking about a chatzi zayit there and a chatzi zayit over there, where they're split. So therefore, it's not even relevant to the question of Rabbi Yehuda. Aval b'kezayit shalem, if it was one kezayit in one place, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel would agree to Rabbi Yehuda's position. What Rashi is pointing out is that Rabbi Yehuda's position in and of itself is not a stira with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. It's not even relevant to their world. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva spoke about a chatzi zayit on one side, a chatzi zayit on the other side. Rabbi Yehuda spoke about an aggregated, a place where you have a single kezayit in one place. So therefore, they never cross paths. They have nothing to do with each other. It's a different case totally. Rav Huna is the one who brings them together. Rav Huna says, "V'hu shekanaso." That's only if you gathered it together. The implications of Rav Huna are that it was disparate places, and now he brought them together to a kezayit. That is exactly like the case of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Now you have a problem. Now you have to fit into Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva because you're speaking about a chatzi zayit here, a chatzi zayit there, and you bring them together. Well, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva addressed that case. Now I have an issue. How do I deal with Rav Huna in that context of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? That's first of all the important distinction between Rabbi Huna's standalone shita and why Rav Huna's qualification of the shita brings it into the world of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. The other thing the Balei Tosafot will point out is, wait a minute. Even if Rabbi Shmuel agrees that when it's basar on the flesh, it's not batel, does that really mean that Rabbi Yehuda is following the shita of Rabbi Shmuel? Because according to Rav Huna, he said, "V'hu shekenaso." That's only if you gather it together. Rabbi Shmuel says his din, when you have a chatzi zayit here and a chatzi zayit there, it's not batel. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree with that because Rav Huna says only v'hu shekenaso. Only if you actively gather it together afterwards is it the case. So how can you even say that Rav Huna in Rabbi Yehuda's shita is built on top of Rabbi Shmuel? Rabbi Shmuel doesn't require that additional stage. Rabbi Shmuel just says, it's basar, even if it's split up. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you gather it together, then it'll be basar. And that's what Tosafot says over here. V'im tomar, v'ar Rabbi Shmuel below kenaso kamar. Then Rabbi Shmuel says, then even without bringing it together. And Rabbi Yehuda by kenos. And Rabbi Yehuda requires you to gather it together, kedam Rav Huna. V'yesh lamar, t'plugtai d'r Rabbi Shmuel v'kiva. That their machloket is a case where an animal came and attacked and severed the basar. That's why Rabbi Shmuel doesn't require you to bring it together. So Tosafot does something to reconcile that problem by saying that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva's machloket is about platuto chaya. When an animal severed the basar and put it on the or. On the other hand, if it was a case where you flayed the animal and there was basar that was left on the hide, even Rabbi Shmuel will agree with Rabbi Yehuda that v'hu shekenaso. You have to bring it together in order for it not to be batel. So that's how Tosafot deals with that issue in trying to bring together the what seemingly is a disparate view of Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Huna's qualification of Rabbi Yehuda. All right, so now the Gemara says, Ella, the Olam, Platato Sakin, Le Rabbi Shmuel Lo Batil. That when you splay it with a knife, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not batel. And not batel means up front, it's not batel to the or. That means that it has a shem basar on it. And that is Rav Huna's qualification of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was saying this in the shita of Rabbi Shmuel. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, where it's on the hide, it's not batel. Therefore, who cannot so, it will be chayav or you'll be tumat nevela. And then we'll have to say what Balei Tosafot said. The reason you need knaso, which Rabbi Shmuel doesn't require, is because Rabbi Shmuel is speaking about a chaya, and here we're speaking about a flaying. V'Rav Huna damar k'Rabbi Akiva. But the second statement of Rav Huna was made in the shita of Rabbi Akiva. When Rav Huna says, Shnei chatzei zeitim, sheyesh nan al kavi or, ho or min vatlan, He said that within the Shita of Rabbi Kiva, not Rabbi Yishmael. So Gemara says, Shita. The reason we didn't say that up front was because that's so straightforward. Rabbi Akiva makes it clear that when you have a chatzik zayit here and a chatzik zayit there, it's not tamei tumat vasatz, but tell the gamrei. So what do you need to tell me that? You haven't added anything for me. So, ma'u detema, I would have thought, kinkama Rabbi Akiva, hanemi lei platato sakin. I would have thought Rabbi Akiva's shita is limited to the case of flaying the animal, where those pieces are automatically batel, according to Rabbi Akiva, by the mere fact that you're flaying it and you don't really care about them. That's what people normally do with this, is they let it go to the or, they're mevatel to the or. Aval platato chaya. In a case where the chaya severed it, lo batel, maybe it would not be batel. Kimashmelan. That's what Rabbi Huna is telling us. The chiddush in Rabbi Akiva is, we're not sure why Rabbi Akiva thinks it's batel to the or. There are two possibilities. It's either batel to the or, because when you flay the animal, that's the intent of people. When they flay the animal, whatever little pieces of basar are on the or, they're mevatel it. Or it could be that the or itself is mevatel the basar. It has nothing to do with the intent of the individual. It's the mere fact that there's basar on or, that's automatically makes it batel. As long as it's below the threshold of a kezayit, it's automatically batel. We don't know which of those two, Rabbi Akiva says. The nafkamina between them is platato chaya. When an animal takes it, when there's no human involvement. When there's no human involvement, you don't have active bitul over there. So in that case, is the basar batel to the or? If you say that it is because of active human involvement and you're revatel it when you take it off, then batel chaya would still be basar according to Rabbi Akiva. If you say it's or qua or that causes the bitul over here, then irrespective of how it happened, whether it happened actively or passively, it should be batel. That's Rav Huna's chiddush. He's coming to tell you that Rabbi Akiva believes that the or is mevatelet, irrespective of the intent of the individual. And that's why the Gemara says, Kamash Malan, that Taima, the Rabbi Akiva, Mipnesha or Mivatlan. The real reason behind Rabbi Akiva is because by definition, something on the hide is batel. Loshna palat chaya, loshna palat sakin. Makes no difference how the basar ended up on the or. As long as it's below the threshold of the kazayit, it is batel. Kidetani seifa, and that's the conclusion in the Seifa, where it says, Mipnei ma Rabbi Akiva mitaher ba'or, Mipnei sha'or mivatlan. He says that he gives the explanation of his shita is because the or is mivatelet. It's not because the flayer is mivatelet, because the or is mivatelet, and therefore the trigger is the or. And that is what Rav Huna is telling us. That's the reason behind Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva's bitul applies both to platato sakin as well as platato chaya. Okay, next Mishnah. Elu she'orotehen kibsaran. In these instances, the hide has the same din as basar. Basar has tumat ochlim, and in some instances, basar can also have tumat nevela. Now, tumat ochlim will require hechsher, will require something to make it tamei. Tumat nevela will be inherent tumat. Now, a hide in general is not an edible part of the animal, and therefore, without any information, you would have assumed that the hide does not have a din like basar. That means that it won't have tumat ochlim. It can't become tamei if something touches it, unless it's used or made into a kli. And secondly, it will not have a din of nevela, because it's not basar. But we have certain instances where the hide is so soft that it has the same din as basar. There's certain parts of the animals, and certain animals where the hide or the skin around that location is so soft that people eat it like basar. They don't even take the skin off. It'd be akin to chicken skin, that when you cook the chicken, you eat it along with the flesh. You don't have to take off the skin because it's so thin or it's so soft that it can be eaten along with the flesh itself. So there are certain parts of animals and animals that have that din. One is or hadam. When it comes to the skin of a human being, the human being's skin has the same din as his basar. So if you have basar, kazayit basar minameit, that's mitamei bo'el, that can include not just the basar, but also the or, the flesh of the human being. Ba'or chazir shel yishuv. And a domesticated pig, also the skin of the pig is supple and soft, that it can be eaten like the basar. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af or chazir abar. Even the wild hogs would also have the same din. Their or is soft enough that it's classified as basar. Just as an aside, it's just an interesting note that they're even arguing. These are Tanaim in Eretz Yisrael arguing about a chazir, when we know that the Mishnah tells us that one of the restrictions was to raise chazirim in Eretz Yisrael. And some of these Tanaim live in a period where they're is Roman dominion. Some of the earlier Tanaim don't. They live time of the Beit HaMikdash. So it's interesting, even that the Tanaim here are arguing about a pig and the status of a pig, how much exposure they really had to domesticated pigs, as well as to wild boars, although those do exist naturally in Eretz Yisrael. Ve'or chatrat shel gamal haraka. And the hump on a camel that is soft. The Gemara will ask, what does a soft camel mean? Raka usually means something that is delicate or something that is vulnerable, which means it's got to be a young camel. Because this, up till one point, is a young camel's hump considered to be soft enough that it's like basar. Ba'or harosh shel egel arach. And the skin or the hide on the head of a young calf. So the same thing here. Again, you'll have to ask, until what point is it classified as a young calf? Ba'or ha-prasot, which the Gemara will deal with towards the end of today's daf, which is the hide or the skin around the hooves. What part of the hooves or where that skin that we're speaking about? Ba'or beit ha-boshet, the area or the skin around the genitalia of the female, which is very soft. Or ha-shalil, the skin that is on a fetus, which again is not hardened or fully developed, so therefore it's like basar. Ve'or shel tachat aliyah, and the skin or the hide that is below the tail of the animal, which once again doesn't have hair on it, is a very soft area of the skin of the animal. Ve'or, now we're going from parts of animals to entire animals over here, which is hanaka, vakoach, valita, vachomet. Now these are animals that are mentioned in Parshat Shmini, this week's Parsha. These are Zelachem, Atamei, Basheretz, Usheret, Salaretz. These are the Shratzim that are problematic. There are 8 Shratzim that the Torah notes as being problematic or having Tumah. Acholet, Vachbar, Vatzav, Limineu. Hanaka, Vakoach, Valita'a, Vachomet, Vatinshamet. So out of these 8 over here, the Tana mentions 4 of them, which is Hanaka, Hakoach, Alita'a and Achomet. Mentions those 4 of them, where he says, Orotahem kibisaram, that they don't have a separate hide, skin, and basar. Their skin is basar. There's no distinction between them. And the 4 are the Hanaka, which is maybe the hedgehog, Hakoach, which is maybe the chameleon, the Halita'a, which is likely a lizard. You can see that in the Rashi's La'az, where he calls it Litairda, and Achomet is a snail, and you can see that later on Rashi mentions that the chomet grows with its shell, so that would be the snail. Its shell gets bigger along with it, and Rashi says if you find one of those shells early on, it is the size of a kadasha. And he says if you look at the tikshela, you look at its packaging, meaning that its shell, shigadelbo lechima, that grows along with it, tchilat keato kadasha mamash hu bishulav. Look at the way base of it, that exactly like the size of a lentil seed. And that's the smallest sized sheretz that you can have. And that's where we get tumat kadasha by a sheretz. And Rashi says that's evidenced by the shell of the snail, that at the tip of the shell of the snail, that's the size of a lentil, and that's the beginning of the chomet. So those 4 shretzim are included in this list over here. The lizard has the same din as the chuldah, which is one of the other ones that is mentioned in the Torah. And the chuldah, there the or and the basar are separate. And the lizard has that same status. Vikulan shibdan. If you then work these hides, which is that you've now processed these hides to the point where they're now useful as throws, blankets, or other things that can be made into shoes. At that point, o sheilech ben kedei avodah. Or you put them out to be stomped on or trampled on by people. There are different ways to process the leather or the hide to make it into a soft leather. One is to use the chemical process, which is the process of ibud that is described here in the Gemara that's still done till today, where you soften leather through a chemical process, the tanning of the skins. The other method for doing that is to throw it out on the ground and have people walk on it. Over a certain period of time, if there's enough pressure and work almost kneading the leather softens because of that. And that's what's being described as either one of those is done, tehorim. Then they become tehor, meaning that they no longer have a status of basar. You can change them from being basar into a hide if you work them to the point where they have a status of leather. At that point, they are no longer called basar. They're definitely called or at that point. chutz mi'or adam, the exception of the skin of a human being, which retains its status as skin even after ibud. Yochanan ben Uri omer, shmona sratzim yesh lehem orot. All eight of the sratzim that are mentioned in the Torah over here in Parshat Shmini, all of them have hides or skins, or in essence have skins that are differentiated from their basar, and therefore their skin is not metamei kebisaram. That's obviously the relevance over here with regards to the shratzim, is that if they or is kebasar, then the sheretz, which is metamei, then the or, if it's kebasar, will then have the same status as the basar, which is tamei. In addition, the idea that there's or and basar is also relevant in the din of Shabbat as to whether you can cause injury that has bruising that will be considered to be a chavalah b'Shabbat. If you have or, if you have hide that is separate from the basar, then when there's an injury, the blood gets captured between the or and the basar. And that's what causes the problem of the chavalah. On the other hand, by animals that don't have separation between the or and basar, then the chavalah doesn't have the capacity to bruise then. It will just cause the automatic bleeding, or be as if you went into the basar directly. So it's a difference that shows up in the Gemara and Shabbat as well with regards to Shmona Shratzim. Amar Ula, Dvar Torah, Mina Torah, or Adam Tor. Really, the skin of human beings is Tor. Matam Amru Tamei. So then why did Chazal make it Tamei? Gzeira Shema Yaseh Adam Orot Aviv V'Imo Shtichim. Because maybe the person will make his father and mother's skin into throws. He'll use them for his bed, he'll use them for his couch, he'll use their skins for whatever it is. So Tosfot says, what's the significance of Aviv V'Imo? Why is that mentioned over here? So Tosfot says, V'afagav demeita surbana, it's not unique or particular to his parents, any mate is a surbana, so why not just say it so you don't take any mate and make it into a throw? U'b'kol adam asur lasot mirosh tichin, and anybody's skin you can't make into a throw. Imo kol makom, lo avu gazrei rabonan mishum ha'chashosha she'etamei el mishum aviv v'imo dechamir tuva. The first answer Tosfot gives is that for regular people, they're not going to put in a gzeira because that's not seen to be such an affront. I mean, it's a problem. You shouldn't be doing this to the mate. But when you do it to one's parents, that's a double affront. Not only are you taking a human being and taking their skin, which is inappropriate, probably not moral, and something that is an isra'ana, but that's another person. You do that to one's parents? That's a further lack of kibud avim. That's so extreme and so problematic. There they were willing to be gozer. That's one aspect. But then he brings the other side of it. Or maybe, whether this is a combined problem, or this is the major problem, is that they're available to him. Parents pass away. In those days, people passed away in their homes. So the parents pass away, then it's right there. He has the ability to take the hide. It's not, somebody else's skin is not available to him. But his parents, they pass away locally, and they're within his purview, so he can take them. So Tosafot says it's for two reasons it focused on Vivimo. One, the accessibility. And number two is the extremeness of the problem with regards to Kibud Avim also being on top of the normal problem of Isarana associated with the mate. So now, they Ika de Matne La Seifa. Some say that this qualification of Ula, or this statement of Ula, is made on the latter half of the Mishnah. Kulan Shibdan, Oshalech Ben Kedei Abudat Torim. That the latter part of the Mishnah where it says that if you work them, you tan them, that they are Torim, they no longer have a din of basar, chutz mi'or adam, with the exception of human skin. Amarula Dvar Torah or Adam Shibdo Tor. That the truth is that in the latter half of the Mishnah it's also Tor. Umatam Amru Tamei. Why do they say it's Tamei? Zera, Shem Yaseh Adam Oro Tavi V'imo Shtichim. So Madamat Nila Reisha, the one who says it on the Reisha, Koshakena Seifa. He says on the Reisha, he means that from the outset, that the skin of a person is not mitamei. Period. Midoraita, there is no such thing. It's not basar. The skin of a human being is separate. He says, the gzeira is that we made it tamei, so the person doesn't do this. Well, if it's a gzeira when the person is tamei, when their or is still intact, and it was really tahor, then certainly the latter part of the Mishnah that says that human skin is excluded is clearly a gzeira, because if inherently it's not tamei, then clearly after you do ibud to it, it shouldn't be tamei, so clearly the second half is also a gzeira. On the other hand, mandamatni aseifa avalareisha tumadoraita. The one who says that in the latter part of the Mishnah, which is only after it's been tanned or worked, there it's tahor midoraita, but Chazal instituted that there is a din of tumah anyway. Then in the reisha, there really is tumah doraita. The skin of an individual is tamei tumah midoraita. It's only after the ibud. That to me, given Ula's statement, seems to make more sense here, only because he's saying that you're making it into shtichim abimimo. It sounds to me like it's a situation in which there's ibud, and what you want to say is that the ibud doesn't do the normal thing that it would do to skin, which is free it of the tumah. By human beings, it maintains the tumah in order to prevent people from acting or engaging in such practices. Right? Vor chazir v'chule. B'mai kamiflege. What is the machloket here with regards to the chazir? Mar savar hayishon v'hay rakich. Seems to be, from the Gemara, it's a practical machloket. One of them says that the chazir abar has hard skin, v'hay rakich, and the domesticated pig has soft skin. Marsaver hainami rakich. And Rabbi Yehuda believes that even the wild boar also has soft skin. So they're just arguing about the practicalities. Now whether that is more evidence of the fact that they really didn't have access to them, and now they're arguing about something where they didn't see it, and so it's not something where they can empirically go and check, but it's something in theory that they're trying to discuss over here, or whether this is really just a practical machloket as to what that skin of the wild boars are, which happen to be very dangerous and hard to catch and to hunt down, so they may not have had as easy access to them. It could be an argument about what's classified as soft. Meaning, what are the gradations of soft and hard? Where do you have to be on that spectrum in order to be soft? Or chatrat shel gamal haraka, the soft hump of a young camel. Kama gamal haraka. When is a camel considered to be young, that the hump is considered to be like the basar? Amarul am Rabbi Shimon Levi, kozman shalotana, as long as you haven't loaded it. Before you put loads on the back of the animal, that's when it's considered to be young. So the feature of putting on the load could be for one of two reasons. It could be because you wait for the animal to be strong enough and for the skin to develop where it's not going to cause a problem when you load it up. Or it could be by placing loads on the animal, that itself hardens the skin of the camel. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question. By Rami Irmiya, Yigiyaz mana liton velo ta'ana. What happens if it reaches the point in time where normally you would load such a camel, but you didn't do it? Mo, what would be the din there? Again, if you think it's a din in the loading, and that's what causes it to harden, here you didn't load it on. Or is it simply an age factor? Once it reaches a certain age, it hardens, that's why you would put a load on it. Again, same thing, if it's underage, where you normally wouldn't load it up, but you did anyway, and you loaded it up, what's the impact on the basar? Teiku. Both of those are left as unresolved issues. So it's not clear whether the issue is the hardening of the skin naturally, or it's the loading of it that causes the skin to harden, which of those is the contributing factor, and therefore we don't know when you separate those two issues from each other as to whether it would be or not be considered to be or. Yotiv Reish Lakish becoming Vayile. Reish Lakish was sitting and querying or thinking, Kama Gamal Haraka. What is a young camel? When is that classified as a young camel? Amarle Rabbi Shmuel bar Abba, Halcha Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kozman Shalot Ta'ana. As long as you haven't loaded it up, Amarle Tiv Likabli. Sit opposite me, sit to greet me, or the way Rashi says it over here, Shamartali Davar Tam, you said something that was good, V'yasher Kochacha, and you're good, I'm thanking you for that. You did a great thing, you taught me something that I didn't know already. Yotiv Rabbi Zeira. So in another situation, Rabbi Zeira was sitting, Rikami Baile, Kama Gamal Haraka. Same question. When is a young camel considered to be a young camel? Amale Rabin Bar Chinina, Hachi Amar Ula Am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kozman Shalot Ana. As long as it hasn't taken on a load. Hava Katani La. He went to repeat it. So the word Mishnah or Katani La means to repeat or go over it. So he went to repeat it. Amale Chada Hav Yalach Amart. You had one good thing to say, and you said it already. Pipe down. You don't need to say it anymore. You came up with one thing we don't know, and now you said it. You don't need to repeat it. We heard you the first time. So Gemara says about this. Tachazi, ma ben tkife arad Yisrael, lechaside bovel. See the big difference between the great ones of Eretz Yisrael and the chasidim of Bavel. And the great ones of Eretz Yisrael is a reference to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, were the first generation Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. They were known as the great ones in Eretz Yisrael. And Reish Lakish's reaction to being taught about this issue was, wow, thank you for sharing with me. Have a seat. Why don't you share kochacha? On the other hand, Rabbi Zeira, who's also in Eretz Yisrael, that's why he is Rabbi Zeira, but he made Aliyah. He came from Bavel, and we know that he fasted 40 fasts to forget the Torah of Bavel in order to then be steeped in the Torah at Eretz Yisrael. But Rabbi Zeira was also known as a chassid. The Gemara says in Bava Metzia that every 30 days he used to sit inside the oven to check himself to see if anything got burnt or anything got singed on his body to tell him that he had done something wrong. And he used to check himself every 30 days to see that he was immune to the heat or the fire of the tanur. He's made chassidei Bavel. And so chassidei Bavel, his reaction was one of sternness. All right, you said your thing. Sit down now. We don't need to hear from you again. The Gemara is showing you the difference between Torah Eretz Yisrael and the behavior of the Tekifei, of the great ones of Eretz Yisrael, versus the Chassidei Bavel, which is interesting in general. The Gemara in a number of places makes the distinction between Torah Eretz Yisrael and Torah Bavel as to the nature of Torah Eretz Yisrael versus the Torah Bavel. And here is one of those places that it notes that the learning in Eretz Yisrael, or the midot of those that learned in Eretz Yisrael, was at a higher level or was of a greater nature, and that's what they're pointing at over here. Kevora Rosh, the skin or the hide on the head of a young calf. Vekama Egel Arach, what is considered to be a young calf? Ula Amar Ben Shnato, in its first year, it's a calf. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kozman Shionek, as long as it's nursing, it's classified as an egel. Ibailu Heichik Amar Ula, what was Ula's statement? And based on Ula's statement, then what is Rabbi Yochanan's reaction? Is Ula's statement, ben shnato vehu yonek? He requires both things. That he needs both that it be in the year and yonek. So if it is over a year and still nursing, no good. If it is younger than a year but not nursing, also no good. That's what Ula says about ben shnato. Ben shnato is a second qualification. You need to have yonek plus ben shnato. And Vamai Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan comes and Rabbi Yochanan calls Man Shionek. He says, no, there's only one factor here, nursing. If it's nursing, it is young. If it's not nursing, it's not young. That's it. There's one qualification. You don't need both of them. Odilma, Ula Ben Shnato Kamar. Maybe Ula is saying 1 year old, Ben Yonek, Ben Sheno Yonek. Makes no difference whether it's nursing or not nursing. A year is a year. Whether it's nursing beforehand, afterwards, none of that matters. A year is the qualification. And then Rabbi Yochanan is the machmir now who says, not only you need benchnato, you also need yonek, you need to have it that there are both items in order for it to be a garach. So tashma, the Gemara proves it from the Lashona Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, kozman shionek, as long as it is nursing. And we saw in the way the Gemara formulated the two options, that the first option had Rabbi Yochanan saying, kozman shionek. And therefore, if Rabbi Yochanan's statement is Kozman Shionek, means his response is to Ula saying both Ben Shnato and Yonek, and Rabbi Yochanan's coming along and saying Behu Shionek. That's the only thing that matters. As long as it is Yonek, then it is good. That's Rabbi Yochanan is therefore the Kula, because in Ita, if it was true that Rabbi Yochanan was the Chumra Behu Shionek Mi Bayale, he should have said that it is Yonek, meaning that that's a second qualification on top of the first qualification. Shmamina, that Rabbi Yochanan is the Kula, and not the Chumra. Now, Tosafot over here asks, how do you know that that's the case? There is a third possibility as to what their machloket is, which is Tema. Akate abimatzni bayi, odilma hachikamar Ula. Ben shnato, ben yonek, ben shonu yonek. Maybe Ula believes that 1 year old, whether it is nursing or not nursing, and Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, kozman shionek, which is yonek, ben shnato, ben shnato. Maybe the machloket is simply about the qualification. Ula says 1 year, age is the only thing that matters. And Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, age has nothing to do with it. All that matters is nursing. The Gemara assumed that at least one of the two parties over here believes you need both qualifications. So it says, why can't you explain the machloket as one has a qualification of age, one has a qualification of nursing. So Tosafot says something here, which is very important just in terms of Gemara in general. It says, Ve'esh Lamar, we don't want the machloket to be so disparate. We don't want it to be on extremes. We want to narrow the scope of the machloket between them, which is something the Gemara always tries to do, and that Rishonim also tried to do. that when we have disagreements, we want to narrow the scope of the disagreements and find all the areas where they agree. And therefore, Tosafot says the assumption of the Gemara here is they can't be that far apart. It can't be that they're so distinct in their opinions, so it has to be that there's some overlap between their opinions, and that's why the Gemara does not entertain that possibility. Now, the Bai Tosafot bring from the Rabbi Yaakov Mekorbil a different answer, which is interesting. He says, "Teres kekula shmaitin sabra diyoter kasheh avilu tok shnatok she'en yunek miyunek achar shnatok." The Gemara's assumption is that nursing is clearly a better indication of softness. Year, the threshold of age, is less of a determinant. And therefore, if you believe that up to a year, you think that it is okay, by definition, you also think that yonek works, because yonek is a much better indication than shnato. And therefore, if Ula believed that up to a year was a qualification, by definition, you'd also have to believe that yonek is the case. And that's why you can't explain their machlokin as being about shnato versus yonek, because it's a kavachomer. You believe Acho Shnato is qualified, then certainly you believe Yonek, because Yonek is a much better indicator of softness or youth than age is, and for that reason you can't set it up in the way that the Balei Tosafot had suggested. So his answer is more unique to this situation, rather than a more fundamental idea. Tosafot says it's a fundamental idea, we don't want the Machloket to be so far apart. Rabbi Yaakov Mekorbil says in this particular Machloket, you can't do that because of the interplay between the two items. But Ein Hachanami, theoretically, they could have argued on that had it not been for the fact that these two issues overlap in a sense that Yonek is a much better indicator than Shnato. And now the Gemara says, "Baimine Reish Lakish mi Rav Yochanan." Reish Lakish asked Rav Yochanan, we saw this earlier in the Masechta, "Ora Rosh Shel Egel Arach," the hide of a calf around the head, "Mahu Shitameh." That means both does it have Tumat Uchlim, as well as maybe does it have Tumat Nevela. Tosafot says over here, this was a real case. Reish Lakish is asking Rabbi Yochanan a case law over here. Amalei Einu Mitameh. It doesn't have a din of Tumat, doesn't have a din of Tumat Uchlim, doesn't have a din of Tumat Nevela. Amalei Vimatanu Rabbeinu. Didn't you teach us the Mishnah? Elu Shoteim Kibsaram. Our Mishnah, which is Ve'or Arosh Shel Egel Arach. So, you taught us a Mishnah, and now you're telling me a Psak Halacha that goes against this Mishnah. So how do we reconcile that? Amalei, Al Taknik Deni, don't challenge me. Don't provoke me. L'shon Yachid Ani Shoneota. I say that the Mishnah is a Dat Yachid. Now Rashi over here, we've had this twice in the Gemara beforehand. We had it back on Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph, as well as on the Ayin Zayin. And the Rashi over there in all these cases says that the attribution of this position is to a Yachid. The Bayit Tosafot and the other places say that that cannot be the reason. Just because a Yachid said it does not make it that the Halacha would not be like that. Because many times Rabbi takes that Yachid and makes it into a Stam Mishnah. And the Gemara says Halacha is Stam Mishnah. And in particular, Rabbi Yochanan is the believer that Halacha is Stam Mishnah according to Rabbi Bar Chana. So if that's the case, just by the mere fact that it's a Dat Yachid doesn't make it that it would be something that Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't paskin like. When Rabbi Yochanan says Dat Yachid, the Bayit Tosafot say that that means in his Mishnah it was written Divrei, and then it gave attribution to that Yachid. I mean that his Mishnah wrote it as a Dat Yachid, not as a Stam Mishnah. Otherwise, it would not be meaningful that it was a Dat Yachid. Just because it's a Dat Yachid doesn't mean the Halacha is not like that. A Stam Mishnah, but Dat Yachid is Halacha Kistam Mishnah. So, Bayit Tosafot are very careful in the other instances to point out Rashi over here is somewhat akir. Here he says, Shani Omer, Elazar ben Yehuda Amra, that Elazar ben Yehuda said it. So it's not clear whether he means that that was what was written in his Mishnah, or meaning that he just gives attribution to it. In the other locations, Rashi sounds much more like the fact that I think it's a Dat Yachid, not that that was written in the Mishnah. And that's why Tosafot challenges him and says that can't be the case. Has to be that it was literally written in Rabbi Yochanan's Mishnah. Tatanya, we have a Braita. Ashuchete ta'ula, laktir kezayit mi'or shetachar aliyah, Chutz limkomo, patzul, veimbo karet. Chutz lizmano, pigul, v'chayamin alav karet. So this is back to the world of pigul from zvachim eminachot. You know that pigul is when you have a makshava during one of the avodot of the dam. During those four avodot in the bringing of the animals of korban, if you have a makshava to eat either something that's normally eaten outside of the time frame or outside of the location where it's permitted, or you have in mind to be maktir, something that's normally muktar on the Mizbeach outside of the time period or outside of the place where it normally is. That's what's called chutz limkomo or chutz lizmano. So here, bayin olah, where the entirety of the basar olah goes on the Mizbeach, with the exception of the hide that goes to the Kohanim, what we're saying over here is if you shechten olah, which is one of the avodot that you can have a machshava in, is shechita, and haktir kezayit mi'or shetar aliyah chutz limkomo, and you have in mind to be maktir, the flesh that is under the tail of the animal, to be maktir in chutz limkomo. So here, by the olah, the basar goes on the Mizbeach in its entirety. So the or haliyah, it's classified as basar, is also something that goes on the Mizbeach. So here, what you have in mind to put on the Mizbeach, chutz limkomo, outside of the place where you're supposed to do it, meaning outside of the Mizbeach or the Azara, pasul ve'bo karet. The din then is it's pasul, but you're onar chayav karet if you consume that basar. Chutz lizmano, if you had in mind to do it outside of the time period, pigul v'chayavin alav karet. That's pigul, and you're chayav karet if you consume that basar that you had that machshava about, or someone else consumes the basar, they'd be chayav karet for that. Elazar ben Yehuda ish avlom, Omer mishum Rabbi Yaakov, v'chena yer mishum ben Yehuda ish kvar ikum, Omer mishum Rabbi Shimon, echad or prasot, the skin or the hide that's around the hooves, v'echad or harosh shalei rach, or the skin that's above the head of an egel harach, v'echad or shal tachar aliyah, and the skin that's under the tail of the animal. Anything that the Chachamim noted in our Mishnah, that their hides, their skins are like their basar, by a behemat mea. So all of those are included in this problem where you would have either chutzim kamo, chutzim zmano, if you have the wrong makshava. Lahavi, what was his extra statement at the end where he says, orotayim kibsaram? That's lavi orsho beta boshet. To include the area of the female genitalia, that's also classified. So why did he just say it straight out? He listed all the other items. He couldn't list this item. He had to put it in. Oh, what the Chachamim say, or dam sheb saram. So Rashi notes over here, is because the context of this braita is an olah. By an olah, there are no females. So dam kim saram, about beta boshet, is not relevant by an olah. So he says all the items that are relevant by an olah. Then he says also these other things, which are relevant not by an olah, but by a Shlamim, where you would bring a female, and then that would also be included where, if you had in mind, to eat it outside of the time period, because that part is not going on the Mizbeach, it's given to the Baalim to eat, so if you have in mind to eat it outside its time or space, then you'd have Pigol or Chutz Limkomo. So therefore, in those instances, you have Machshava, Chutz Limkomo, Pasul, Bainbo Karet, Chutz Lizmano, if you have Machshava to do it outside of its time, Pigol, Bechai Levin, Alav Karet, and what you see here is this concept that the or Rosh Egel Arach is not the dad of the Tanakama. It's the perspective of Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yehuda. That's the one who says it, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. It's a dat yochid, according to Rashi means. It's this attribution is to him. According to Tosafot, it means that in his Mishnah it said b'Rei Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it was not a stam Mishnah because it was assigned to that particular Tana. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says, "Don't ask me from the Mishnah over here." Because the Mishnah is a dat yachid and not a stam Mishnah. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, or beta prasot, the hide or skin by the hooves, my beta prasot. What are the area of the hooves? Rav Amar, beta prasot mamash. Literally, the skin that's towards the hoof, between basically what would be the ankle of the animal and the hoof, that little area in the connection where there's or there, that's what's classified as or beta prasot. That's the soft skin. Rabbi Chanina Amar, rikuva hanim keretim arosh. It is the metatarsus, which is, as Rashi notes over here, the different bones that we spoke about in terms of the structure of the animal. You have the three bones that construct the leg of the animal. The lower bone, the middle bone, and the upper bone. Here we're speaking about the lower bone, which is basically from the arkova lamata, the lower knee, down to the hoof, all of that is classified as being or beta prasot. It is the leg that is sold along with the head. That's how they termed it in their day, because it was brought together with the head. That's both in the Migdash. It was brought on the Mizbeach together, that leg and the head of the animal. It was something that was sold together in the market. And it is also something where the or is soft over here, at least according to Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina has a much wider area where he thinks the skin is soft, like the basar, the lower part of the leg, Unlike Rav, who thinks it's a very small location right above the hoof, that is considered to be the soft skin. Tarabanan, hatmeim. With regards to the shvatzim, in this week's parsha, Parshat Shmini, it says, the list of shvatzim, it says, Ela hatmeim lachem b'chol ha'sharetz, kol nogei ben b'motam itma ad ha'arev. So hatmeim, the extra hay over there, the rabot orotayem kibsaram, to tell you that their or, their skin, has the same din as their basar. Yachol afilu kulan, you would think that would include all of them. Tamalomar, Ela, these. Ela hatmeim lachem. Or says, va'ela akuluk tivi. I don't understand the limud. You have a list of the shvatzim. Zeh tu amachem etamei b'sharetz v'shvei tzalaretz. Acholei rach barat zav lemineu. Fanaka v'koach v'lita v'chomev etin shamet. Ela hatmeim lachem. So, it's including all of those above. How can you say that Ela means some and not all? Ela is a reference back to all those that were before. Samarav, lemineu, hifsika inyan. Lemineu divides it up. So if you listen, it says, Zelachem atamei b'sharetz v'shvei tzalaretz. Acholei rach bar v'tzav. Lemineu. That's the first pasuk. Has those three of the shvatzim. Then it's next pasuk. Hanaka v'koach v'litah v'chomevet inshamet. The other five. Ela atmeim lechem. So Rav claims Lemineu divides them up into two categories. The three and the five. And only the five are modified by the Elu atmeim lechem. Where it says if that's the case, why does our Mishnah only note four shvatzim? Lekshov namit inshamet. Why don't you include the mole as well? Because that's the fifth in the list that's after the Mineu. Where it says, Amar Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Rav Tanuhu. Rav is a Tana, and that's what he believes. Betani Tinshomet. And he put in his Mishnah Tinshomet. He believes that five of the Shretzim have this din, not four of the Shretzim have this din. Because he has Ela from Atmeim Lechem modifying the latter part of the list that's after the Mineu. Vatani Tidan lo Tani Tinshomet. Well then, what are you going to do about our Tana, who doesn't put Tinshamet in it? He has the other four, and not Tinshamet. Amarav Sheshet, Breit Ravidi, Tana Tindan, Savalaki Rav Yehuda. Tana doesn't hold like Rav, but rather like Rav Yehuda, the Azel Batar Gishta, that he goes after the feel, by the touch, or the sensation when you touch the animal. Ubi Gishta, the Halita'a, Kamiflegei. And the Machlokin in the Mishnah, as to whether the Rav Yehuda Omer, Halita'a, Kichuda, versus the Tanakam, who says the Lita'ah has a din like the other three Shretzim, their machloket is, what is the sensory touch of the Lita'ah? When you touch it, is that considered to be soft like basar? Or is that already hard like skin? And that goes along the lines of what you were suggesting before, that they're arguing basically along the spectrum of what is called soft and what is called hard. And they're saying it has to do with your sense when you touch it, but that means that you're going to have differences in opinion about when you touch something. What does it feel? Does it feel hard? Does it feel soft? But that's their machloket. Now Rashi over here explains that hatmeim lachem, we already saw earlier, that hatmeim includes not only just oratam kibasaram, but also that we saw earlier by Kufyud Bet, Siran, Rodvan, Kipashalehem, all those are included with hatmeim lachem. And orarach, and the soft skin is another one of those items that's included from hatmeim lachem. So that's the way that he explains Rav Shita. So Rashi says that the Tan of our Mishnah does it as a logical argument rather than a source out of the Pasuk. The Bali Tosvot have a number of issues here with Rashi's explanation. And that's what Tosvot says over here. Satema came in the Ifsikayan, Lama Li'ela. So first of all, Tosvot says, if it already says the Mineu, why do you need to say Ela? Because by definition, the next Pasuk is only referencing to those five. In addition to that, Perisha Kunchis, Upayusha lo amitana de Braita, lo Rav Yehuda, velo bar plukte. And based on that, the Tana of the Braita is not Rav Yehuda, nor the Tana Kama. Ubechinam kamar Rav, Tana hu polik. And then why do you need to say Rav is a Tana hu polik? Because the Braita itself disagrees with these two opinions. According to Rashi, Hatmeim in Lechem is not the source for Rav Yehuda in our mission, not the source of the Tana Kama in the mission. That means the Braita has a differentiated opinion. So you don't have to say Rav is a Tana and argues. The Braita is who Rav is following. Now you could argue that Rav was the author of the Braita, but the Bali Tosfot say that wasn't necessary. And therefore he believes, V'yesh t'faresh t'kulu itlu drasha t'meim. So Tosfot disagrees with one point, that everybody has to hold of a t'meim lachem. U'muki misvora ribuya bahane t'leit lehu gishto. And the question is the application of hatmeim. Rav says it's very empirical. Look in the pasuk. Whatever is before the Mineu is not included in Ela. Whatever is after the Mineu is included in Ela. Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakh Karma argue born from a logical argument. Yes, Atmeim is the source. The question is, how do you apply Atmeim to the Psukim beforehand? Do you apply it to the animals based on the touch or the sensory effect of touching the skins of these animals? So they just have a different way of categorizing what's included in the Eileh, but they agree that Tamei Mehem Lechem is the source. In that way, the Braita is not like Rav, because the Braita still says HaTmeim Lechem, and then that is still the position of Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakh Kama. It's not disagreeing. And Rabbi Yehuda or the Tanakh Kama could be the author of that Braita. Rav is disagreeing, now Rav needs to be a Tana who Upali. That's number one. The second thing the Balei Tosfot note is, Tema, that if Atmeim comes to include Siran Rodvan from Mineu, why don't you say Mineu breaks the Pasuk up? It says, Yesh lamar da'acha kohanu d'mati'ina an itlehu gishta svaru. The Tosfot, the Shitato, says that over here there's a logical argument as well. And that is by Siran, Rodvan, and Kipan, there's no reason to separate between the Shvatzim. But by the touch, the Oruk and Basar, even according to Rav, there's a reason to separate between them. Even if you say the Mineu is the dividing point, it's still because of the fact that those above have harder skins and those below have softer skins. So he says overlaid on this Eileh is also logic even according to Rav. And for that reason, only over here do we differentiate between before Mineu and after Mineu. But by Tziran, Rodvan, and Kipashalan, there is no such division in the Pasuk. And because it's logical to assume that it applies to all of them. All right. Now we continue in the Gemara. V'chulan sheep done. If you tan them, if you work them, then they lose their shame basar and become real or now, and they're no longer subject to whatever would have been the din of the basar. So heilech in loyelech lo. When you throw it out to be walked on or trampled on by people, that only works if they actually do walk on it. I mean, that's the out there for a period of time when they walked on it. If they didn't walk on it, then just throwing it out by itself is not enough. Usually when it comes to the areas of Tumah, what you do with the item dictates the status of the item. Once you throw it out to be stomped on, you're already being mevatelet from Basar and want it to be stomped on. Why do you have to have a maisa of walking on it in order for that to happen? Right? V'hatani Rabbi Chiya. We have a bright of Rabbi Chiya. Ozen chamor. Take the ear of a donkey. Shitla'a l'kupato. If you use it as a patch for your basket, tehora. It no longer has the status of the basar of the animal. It now has changed to be or into skin now and no longer be basar. Tla'a, when you used it as a patch, apagav de lo helech, even though you never worked it, meaning that simply taking it from the status of an ear to making it a patch, that was enough to make it that it was no longer considered to be something that is tamei. Where is the halach over here? We don't have any working of it, any changing of its status. Mar says, well, the answer is that there is a distinction. Tela'a, over here where you put it on the basket, that's enough. Halachin, lo'elach lo. By us, meaning that in the case of our situation, throwing it out there is not enough to change the status of the item. There you need halach and not halach. So the Gemara's answer in essence is, there is a difference between tla'a and halach. But, as the Balei Tosfot will point out, I'm reading like Rashi, that the answer of the Gemara is basically the question of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Tla'a doesn't need Halech, and our mission needs Halech. And the Gemara answers, you're right. Tla'a is Tla'a, and Halech is Halech. That's what the Gemara answered. So the Gemara's answer is exactly the question. And Tosfot says, according to Rashi's explanation, I'm not sure what happened here. What did the Gemara answer that we didn't know before? What information did they give us that we didn't have before? And that's why Tosfot says over here, this is the way to explain it. Rashi says, well, question is, why doesn't Rabbi Chiya require Halech, like our Mishnah? Or vice versa, why does our Mishnah require Halech? It should be sufficient with Hanacha, just putting it out. Tosfot says that's not the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question is, why isn't Tla'a mentioned in our Mishnah? Why doesn't our Mishnah just say Tla'a? That would be enough. The Sakadatcha, the Tla'a Gara Mehalech. He says, you would have thought that Tla'a is of a lesser level than Halech. So, if Tla'a works, why didn't our Mishnah mention Tla'a also? It mentioned Halech, I understand. But if Rabbi Chiya is right, why doesn't it mention Tla'a as well? And you're thinking, because Tla'a is a lower level of change, then that for sure should be mentioned in the Mishnah. That's a bigger Kiddush. The answer to the Gemara is, Mishani Tla'a apagav delo Halech, klomar, kach li zeh kamo zeh. They're on the same level. Bein Kiddush mezeh yoter mizeh. Gemara's answer is they're equated. So the Gemara's Havamina is Tla'a is a lower form of change than Halech. And that precipitates the Gemara's question. Gemara's answer is, no, tala'a, helech and helo helech lo are of an equal or a parity. And therefore, when the Mishnah said helech, it was the same thing as saying tala'. Or when a priya says tala'a, it's the same thing as saying helech, and there's no disparity between them. Okay. Kama kedei ibud. How much is kedei ibud? It says helech. If it was walked on, then it is considered to be already worked to be an oar. How much does that have to happen? The Gemara says, Amravuna, Amravi Yanai, Arba'at Milin. That's me four mil. I mean, I guess the equivalent, I don't know whether it means time-wise, or it means the amount of walking that would have been the steps, right? The equivalent of Arba'at Milin. Based on that, we get now sidetracked to something else, which is Amravi Abo, Amareish Lokish, Ligavel, Ulitzfila, Ulitzilat Yadayim. When it comes to kneading, davening, and washing one's hands, Arba'at Milim. They also have the same din or threshold, which is 4 mil. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Aibu Amra, not Rabbi Abo, but Rabbi Aibo said it, Ve'arba'a Amarba, and he said 4 things, not 3 things. V'chadimei Nirayu Avoda. And one of them is Avoda, our mission over here, Kedei Avoda, the amount of time that has to be laid out there in order for it to be a high. So obviously that's why it's relevant to our Gemara over here, because according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's version over here, Aibo said, and he also included the Avodah of our Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Here's the big qualification. Lo shanu elo lefanav. That's only if it's going forward. Ovali acharav afilu mil echad enu chuzer. But if it's going backwards, he has to retrace his steps, then even a meal, he doesn't have to go back. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Amar, umina. From that, you can be medayek. Milu deinu chuzer. You don't have to retrace your steps or go backwards. 1 meal, ha pachot mi mil chuzer. If it's less than a meal, then you do need to do that. All right, so let's put this all together. First of all, in terms of this qualification, it seems to me that we're speaking about someone who is traveling. So the question is, what's the obligation in order to continue on in your travels? You want to stop. You're done for the day. You want to stop traveling. If on your way, where you're intending to going further on, if you go another 4 meal, you'll get one of these items. But he tells you, you have to do that. You have to continue traveling in order to get one of these items. That's true if it will be progress for you. Going forward will take you on your way. On the other hand, if it's going to take you out of your way, how far out of your way do you have to go? That we said, not a meal. But then we diet for that means not a meal you have to go, but anything less than a meal, you have to go out of your way to do it. What are these items? There are 4 items that are mentioned here. The first of which is Kedei Avoda, which is our Mishnah, which we know clearly what that has to do with. The other 3, Ligavel, is to knead. Now, Rashi claims that this is someone who's working for a balabait, and he's making him in dough. And now he could do it b'tahara. The question is, how far does he have to go in order to do the tefilat kelim and to make this all b'tahara? So Rashi says that he has up to 4 mil is the amount that he has to travel in order to get the things that would be tahor, to knead the dough on behalf of the balabait. I mean, what is your fiduciary duty to the balabait to do this b'tahara? Even though you didn't ask for it, but that you should do it anyway. That's up to 4 mil. If you could do it within that circumference, then you're obligated to do it. Beyond that circumference, then the balabait has to pay you for travel time, and it can't just assume it's part of the work that you're doing. That's what Rashi says. Then Rashi says, tefillah, hamalech baderech, someone who's traveling, and he wants to stop here, and he has a minion that he can daven in if he goes another 4 mil. So Rashi says tefillah has to do with how far you need to travel for a minion. Netilat yadayim is for washing one's hands, la'achila, to eat. That's what we discussed earlier, that you have to wash yadayim for eating bread, and the obligation to wash one's hands for bread is not just an obligation where if you have it, you do it. If you don't have it, you don't do it. But rather, you have a certain obligation to search for the mayim and get the mayim in order to wash one's hands in order to eat. Those are Rashi's 3 explanations here as to what the issues are. Tosafot says, I don't understand Rashi's explanation. With regards to tefillah b'tzibur, and with regards to netilat yadayim, I understand why you'd be traveling. But the case of the gavel, what does it have to do with going forward 4 mil and backwards 1 mil? You're working for a balabait. Why does it have to do with anything? And therefore, the Balei Tosfot would say over here, according to Rashi, the going forward or backwards has nothing to do with gavel. You don't hire people who are traveling in order to make your dough for you. They're people who are local. And therefore, the four lefanav and acharav are not meaningful in this context. The truth is, you could argue that the place where they do the gibul is in a certain location. So if he's walking to that location, how much further does he have to go in order to get there versus going out of his way? But Tosafot says, based on that, he thinks that the Rabbeinu Hananel's, the Aruch's explanation over here, is the better explanation, which is, if you have a gavel who's far away from you, and you can go another Dalet Milim and wait till you get there in order to have him to do it, do you have to wait? Meaning that when you're traveling and you have somebody who can make the dough for you, do you have to wait for meal until you do the dough? Or do you have to go backwards? How much do you have to go backwards? So Tosfot couches it in the same type of frame, which is you're traveling. How much effort do you have to make in order to have your dough, the tahara? That's determined by the Sufanav and the Acharav. Then he says, Umash perish baruch l'tfilah. So the Aruch has a different interpretation than Rashi for tefillah. Rashi says it has to do with going to minyan. The Aruch says it's washing your hands for tefillah. It means that how far do you have to go to get water to wash your hands for tefillah? It means tefillah and netilat yadayim are one is washing for tefillah and one is washing for netilat yadayim. And how much effort do you have to make in order to wash your hands before you daven? So Tosfot says that he clearly thinks that is not the issue because the Gemara in Brachot says that Abaye used to curse people. They used to go to find water to wash their hands instead of making it on time to Minyan or on time to the Beit Knesset. So it's clear that you would forfeit the washing one's hands to go to the Beit Knesset, and we wouldn't force you to go that far or out of your way to do it. And that's because you can use other Midei de Menake. You don't have to use water. You can actually use other cleansing agents to wash your hands or wipe your hands or scrape your hands and then go and daven. According to them, view that tefillah has to do with how far you need to travel for washing your hands for tefillah. It might be influenced by the view of what the requirement for netilat yadayim is. There's a view amongst the Gaonim Rishonim that the Gemara says that you don't have to wash one's hands if you're under time pressure. Hani mila the Kriyat Shema. That's only for Kriyat Shema, but for tefillah you do need to do it. And obviously that would be the source or the backing for this view over here, as well as that would be bolstered by the Rambam's view that there are chamisha dvarim amakvim et tefillah. There are five things that make it impossible for you to daven. And one of them is tarata yadayim, is washing one's hands. The Rambam sees washing one's hands as a preparatory part of tefillah, not just as something you should do, but rather as a prerequisite. You have to do it, otherwise you can't daven. V'nireh kapir shekuntres, Rashi sounds right, v'inyan itpalel basara ayri. And we're dealing with going to a minyan over here, and then he brings from the Rabbeinu Hananel, who brings a different interpretation, which is Rabbeinu Hananel perish l'tfilah, l'tbol l'tfilato. To go to the mikveh before you daven, and then Tosafot discusses when this was in place, meaning that the takanat balkeri, and whether you have to go to the mikveh before you go to daven. He says, but the perish Rabbeinu Hananel has one advantage. Why did the first mention of Amar Rebbeinu and Rish Lakish only mention three items? It left out avoda, as well as it leaves out another case Tosafot brings from Baba Batra. How come it doesn't mention them? So Tosafot says it's easy to understand according to Rabbeinu Hananel because the three items that I mentioned here are all about Tahara. The Gavel is needing the dough Tahara. The Tfilah is going to the Mikveh to daven Tahara. Tfilah Yadayim is the Tahara Yadayim L'Achila. That's why those three were categorized together and why the others were left out. According to Rashi's interpretation or even the other interpretations, what's the difference between the Arba Milim of Avodah that was left out of these three? Why didn't he include it over here? As well as that Gemara in Baba Batra that has another threshold of distance that one has to go. Why doesn't it mention all of those items? The Tosafot says, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, you gain that one advantage. Now, the Halacha is a lot to say about this. I sent out the Mikorot. I'll just highlight some points over here, which is that you have to go forward for a meal. You have to go backwards up to a meal. Now, what happens if you're not traveling? What happens if you're in your house? How far do you have to go? So the Mishnah Berurah says that being in your house is no worse than going backwards on your travel. You're going out of your way. So if you're traveling, you have to go out of your way up to a meal. That means in your house, you have to go out of your way, quote unquote, at least up to a meal. And that means that people, he says, who are in their houses and within a meal of their house is a minyan, that they are cheatingly tended to din, that they don't get themselves out of their house and go to minyan and daven together with the tzibur, because that's an obligation here. The Gemara says, the tefillah, you have to go at least up to a meal. That's number one. Number two is the question of what does that mean? You have to travel four mil and one mil. Is that a measure of distance or is that a measure of time? Now, obviously, today, that makes a huge difference. And the Be'er Halacha speaks about it if you're dealing with a, what you call a gama parcha, a flying camel, or train, Rechava Barzel, the trains that move fast. Is your obligation to travel four mil? Today, four mil would take you very little time to do it. Or is your obligation to travel 72 minutes, which is the amount of four mil? Or vice versa, if it's a mil, do you have to travel the 18 minutes? Or do you just have to travel a mil, which would be a couple of seconds? In the Be'er Halacha, he makes it clear that he thinks this is a time structure and not a distance structure. That is a huge chumrah. That means that you would have to go, when you're at home, within 20 minutes of your house, you would have to go anywhere you could find a minyan if you could travel 20 minutes and get to a minyan. If it was a mil, it would be a big kula. I mean, not only within a Roman mile of your house would you have to go. That you could do in a minute or two. It wouldn't take you very much time to do that. But the Be'er Halacha says clearly that it is, the time is the consideration and not distance. There are other achronim that seemingly argue on the Mishnah Berurah's view and say that it's about distance and not about time. And obviously that would be a huge kula that you only have to go this distance and not the amount of time it would take to cover that distance given the modes of transportation today. The other thing to discuss is here, why is there an obligation to do this? And what's interesting here is that these are all dinei derabbanan that we're speaking about here, and they're obligating you in these dinei derabbanan to go ahead and make such efforts to do this. Now, the truth is that the Rav Moshe Feinstein and Igros Moshe mentions that even though tefillah is derabbanan according to most Rishonim, with the exception of the Rambam, even according to the Rambam, there's a limited amount of it that is doraita, but tefillah b'minyan seemingly is only a din derabbanan. It's something that's learned out of the Psukim in Parshat Shlach and Parshat Korach by the Gemara in Brachot, but it seems at least that it is only a din derabbanan. Rav Moshe's mechadish over there, that the din of davening b'minyan, say, kiyum of zekeli van peyu, to daven with the minyan because it enhances the tefillah. It's beneficial to daven with the minyan because ain't tefillah tzibor nimeset, because the tefillah tzibor is never rejected. So there are advantages and the Rabbanan encourages you to do it. And just like by any other Hidur HaMitzvah, Chazal obligated you to make an extra effort in order to do the Hidur HaMitzvah, ad tosefet shlish, that's the same concept over here of going four mil towards your destination or a mil out of your way. It's the equivalent of Hidur HaMitzvah, and therefore they obligate you to do this with regards to davening with the minyan. On the other hand, the Shud Ber David wants to conclude from this that if it was just a din derabbanan, then it doesn't seem that this would be the case. He says, that the din of davening with the minyan is mina Torah, because it comes from Amar Krav, Nikdashti B'toch Mina Yisrael, and that is a drasha gemura. Even though tefillah is derabbanan, minyan might make it doraita because of Kiddush Hashem. The inyan of minyan comes from Nikdashti B'toch Mina Yisrael, has to do with Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, when you do Kedusha and Kaddish, which is Kiddush Hashem, you're accomplishing a mitzvah doraita of Kiddush Hashem, and therefore there might be an aspect of the oraita associated with the minyan. And therefore, the obligation would be the equivalent of a mitzvah asay, at least maybe a mitzvah kiyumit, of nikdashti, and therefore an obligation be doraita. And the chiddush then in the Gemara is not the fact that you have to go that far. The chiddush is that you don't have to go more than that. That these are the limitations the Chazal put on for Kiddush Hashem to be done. And obviously that would put a much stronger imposition on the individual to go to minyan and to go the four mil or the one mil if it was really a din d'oraita or there was an accomplishment of mitzvah d'oraita rather than simply a mitzvah d'rabbanan. All right, just to finish up today, Mishnah, Tarabanan. Legion ha'over mi makom na makom. Legion, like the word legions. Legions that go from place to place. V'nichnas labayit, and they go into a house, habayit tamei. The house is automatically tamei. She'en lecha kol legion v'legion. She'en lo kama karka filin. There is no other legions that go door around with a bunch of karkafilim. The Gemara uses this term, kol karkafta delo manach tefillin. Any head or skull that doesn't have tefillin placed on it. So karkafta is a reference to the head, skull of the individual. And Rashi says over here, or Rosh Adam Amet. It is the hide or the skin of a person that has died. They used to take it for sorcery or witchcraft, call it the equivalent of the beheading or the scalping of the enemy, taking the head or the skins of the enemy as a sign of victory. And then they carry it along with them in the battles. So because they do that, by definition, when they go into the houses, you have a problem of tumah. Whether it's tumat ohel, and this is according to those that believe that by goyim there's tumat ohel, or the chashash was that they were Jewish heads that were there, and therefore it would be problematic. And the Gemara brings an example. Ba'alti tamah. Don't be so shocked by this. Shari karka falo shel Rabbi Yishmael, because the head or the face of Rabbi Yishmael munach berosh milachim is placed on the heads of milachim. There is no Mesorah Shas over here, but this should cross-reference the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, where there it tells the story of Karkaf Lo Shel Rabbi Yishmael, as well as in the Midrash that brings the story based on the Asara Harugei Malchut. And that Rabbi Yishmael was one of the Asara Harugei Malchut, and the daughter of the Caesar, or whoever the governor was over here, cried to save Rabbi Yishmael. He said, I can't save him, but I'll do anything you want. She said, save me his face to peel off the skin. And the story that we read on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, the Asara Harugei Malchut, is of the peeling of the skin of Rabbi Yishmael off his face. They only cried when they reached the Mokom HaTfilin. That face of Rabbi Yishmael, based on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, was part of the celebrations in Rome. That when they used to go through the parades in the street, they used to bring the face of Rabbi Yishmael as part of it. That's what's being referenced to here in the Gemara. It was part of the pomp and circumstance of the royalty in Rome, was this face of Rabbi Yishmael. And obviously there are allegorical meanings to this, which is the ascendancy of Esav versus Yaakov. And we discussed this in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but you should be aware of it, because it's clear that the Gemara here is referencing to that concept. But that also would then introduce the possibility that they were speaking about heads of Jews as well, because the proof that they bring that such a thing exists is from Rabbi Yishmael. And so maybe that would say it was Jewish heads, and therefore you would have a din of Tumat Ohel because of that. Or the Gemara is saying maybe it's all about Tumat Maga because of the Or of the Adam. Again, we said that the Or Adam has a din like the Basar, and therefore you have a Kazayit worth of it. It would be Tumat Tumat Bo'el, assuming that it was Jewish. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Chaf Gimel, Amud Aleph.